Police released a 22-second video this week of the deadly accident involving a pedestrian and an Uber self-driving car. The footage shows the SUV about to slam into a woman walking a bike across the road in the dark, but it cuts out right before the collision. It's a conversation about the future of self-driving cars on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The video of the crash elevates questions that were already being asked about self-driving test cars on city streets around the country. Ray Mandley is founder of Mandley Communications. That's a Madison-based firm that specializes in collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping. The company integrates laser sensors in vehicles. Its contracts range from state departments of transportation to the automotive industry, including autonomous vehicles. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, how do you respond to the driverless vehicle crash in Arizona? What are you thinking about it?
Well, first of all, the loss of life is a very devastating thing, and not just to the autonomous vehicle industry, but to everybody. And we really need to scrutinize why something like this has happened. The nice thing about this autonomous vehicle is it did record the entire event, and so we will have the chance to analyze it and try to make sure something like this never happens again.
What technological things do you see going on there?
Well, even though the driver, if you see the video, the driver probably did not see the person walking across the street. And all of us who drive in the dark have been in a situation where we haven't seen either an animal crossing or even seen a person on a bike. But what really should have happened here is the LiDAR has the ability to see through the dark. It is not relative to the amount of light reflecting off of the object. And in this case, I believe that the LiDAR should have saw this person probably at about 70 meters approximately, and the vehicle should have stopped. Also, I'm pretty sure that the vehicle itself was built with an automatic stopping or ranging stopping system, and the vehicle should have braked before it got to the individual.
Help us understand a bit more what LiDAR is, how it works in the vehicle.
Well, the best way to explain LiDAR is imagine you have a hose with a sprayer on the end, and you're spinning it around your head, and the droplets will go out and they'll fall on different objects, and they'll fall at different ranges. The advantage of that being photons is that the reflection of those surfaces comes back to the main camera inside the LiDAR system, and it gives you a ranging or a distance measurement, and that distance measurement is accurate down to the centimeter.
And that gives autonomous vehicles this seeing eye type image or metaphor, if you will.
Yes, so an autonomous vehicle will have several different instruments on it for sensing. One will be a standard camera, and that's why the cameras were available, and we've seen the video from the accident. They'll also have radar. Radar's advanced considerably. I have a 2011 Toyota Sequoia that has a laser ranging system for cruise control. What they found is that when I drive it into the sunlight, you know, direct low sun, the cruise control will shut off and I have to go back to a manual version of it. Also, when it rains or it gets dirt on the screen, I can't see it. With the radar systems, they are not susceptible to those kinds of obstructions. So the thing with radar, though, is that it looks for objects. It can't define objects. And that's where you want to have things like the cameras or the LiDAR assist in that.
What are some other technologies in self-driving cars that are interacting with objects, the road, mapping systems, how that works?
Well, currently, most of the vehicles you see today that have lane keep. So, you know, the level two, there's five levels of autonomy for...
Did you just say lane keep?
Lane keep. Lane keep is a system that's on a lot of different makes of cars today.
Okay.
And that is as you're driving down the road, it looks out in front of your car for the pavement striping. It's using a system by a company that was originally formed in Israel called Mobileye and is now owned by Intel. And that technology is in, you know, hundreds of thousands of cars already. If you go down the street and you see a little window underneath the rearview mirror, that is the Mobileye system. That system looks for the pavement striping, and it's all camera-based, and it'll keep your car from moving off your lane of travel. And that's one of the early systems. Also, at level two, we have our automated cruise controls and automatic stop. And those systems are helping us to keep in slow traffic or run on into the back of another vehicle. Again, my experience with it is if you're driving and you have your cruise control on at a certain speed, as you approach other vehicles, it'll slow your car down automatically. And if the other vehicle stops in front of you, it will automatically brake your car to keep it from running into the back of the car in front.
So a lot of technology, but also having to work in concert with each other. Is that an issue?
Yes, and this gets really complex when we start talking beyond this, because the other part of this autonomous vehicle piece that we're going to see, especially in the next 2 to 3 years, is the connected vehicle. So the vehicles talk to each other. If a vehicle sees something that's different than what they expect, it'll tell all the cars around it that this is happening. So that is a real big piece, and that's where we're going to see everybody who has phones today has 4G phones. Well, 5G is on the horizon, and the difference in a connected vehicle of using 4G and 5G technology or bandwidth is that 4G right now, it takes 3 to 5 seconds for that information to be passed. In 5G, it'll be less than a second. So we can start automating intersections and having all the cars connected. So instead of having signals tell us what to do, the system will actually bring the cars to the intersection. In fact, the university here is doing experiments on Park Street with that frequency technology right now. So they've built an early prototype with the city of Madison, and they'll be expanding that for research.
We are talking about self-driving cars this hour of the morning show. Ray Mandley is our guest, founder of Mandley Communications, a Madison-based firm that specializes in collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping. What are your questions about autonomous vehicles? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Are driverless cars the way of the future? What issues do you have with autonomous vehicles? Do you see benefits other people fail to recognize? And what questions do you have about the technology? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. You raised this question, do autonomous vehicles have to be better than humans? How do you answer that?
Well, certainly humans are amazing animals. And we have some skills that are just unbelievable in terms of the way our minds work. We can attribute many things very, very quickly. But we can also have distractions. One of the things of being able to take in so much information so quickly is that a distraction can cause our attention to drift. And that's what 90% of all fatal accidents are caused by the inattention of a driver. And we've seen an increase here in Wisconsin. We've had a substantial increase in traffic deaths, and they correlate almost directly. You know, we've always had our alcohol-related deaths and our speed-related deaths, but the increase is correlating to the use of cell phones. And we're seeing a lot of people who are distracted inside the car. And even though we have laws against that, people are still taking the freedom to look at their phone when really we need to be paying attention in front of us. That is the difference. That is why, you know, autonomous vehicles, they're not going to be looking at their cell phone, or they're going to have multi-levels of attention, but they'll be focused. It'll be a very focused effort.
Where do we see autonomous transportation already that people may not even realize it's operating without much human input?
Well, when you fly, you know, most of the planes in the sky are flying, so you're actually in a vehicle that is programmed, and certainly there's a lot of distance between aircraft in the sky, so you're not going to hit a pedestrian, but you will hit birds. We saw that happen. The planes are looking for those kinds of anomalies. They look for weather, but mostly they can fly by themselves, and they can actually take off and land by themselves in more advanced airplanes. The other areas in the major shipping in the world today, a lot of that's all run from satellite remotely. So they're autonomous and take very little crew to move, you know, a million-ton ship across the ocean. I mean, these things are amazing the way they can operate and the accuracy that they can be moved around. We also see at airports where we get into a train between the terminals. You notice there's nobody sitting inside that, and that also leads, you know, that's usually on a rail or drive-by-wire. And the other one would be trains. We get on a train, and, you know, the oldest form of autonomy is having the two rails. You put the train between the two rails, and it doesn't go anyplace else. But it's, we still have accidents, and people still walk across the tracks and get hit by trains. Cars get hit by trains. So those variables have to be considered.
Talking about the future of autonomous technology with Ray Mandley, his company specializes in collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping, incorporating laser sensors in cars. Gathering your questions, your thoughts about self-driving cars at 800-642-1234. Would you ride in a vehicle that didn't have a human being at the helm? Do you see a difference between driverless cars on the highway or trains on the tracks? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings, back in just a moment after a news update. Toyota has taken its self-driving cars off the road following the deadly Uber accident in Arizona. Uber has grounded all of its self-driving cars in the four cities in which they were being tested: Tempe, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Toronto. We're talking about autonomous vehicle technology, where we go from here. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ray Mandley stays with us. He founded a company in Madison that specializes in collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping. The company integrates laser sensors in vehicles. Getting your questions, your thoughts about driverless cars, 800-642-1234. Do you have ethical concerns with automation? Perhaps you're worried that machines can't think and feel like people can. Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Let's go to Becky now, joining us from Beloit. Hi, Becky.
Hi, I was just wondering, how easy would it be for somebody, should they want to hack into these systems and cause, well, wreak havoc all over the place? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Becky. Ray?
Well, certainly this is one of the greatest concerns in the use of technology today. We've seen it with the last political election. We're seeing it with the data that we have on our phones. So, yeah, that is a great concern, and we will not put these cars out on the road and have them all connected unless we can create some way to solve that problem. Currently, the technology that is being looked at is called blockchain. When you hear the term Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a blockchain technology, and because of the massive amount of compute power involved in it, it's very, very difficult, almost unfathomable by today's standards, to be able to hack it. But that doesn't mean that we won't have technologies and people who just will find a way to do that. So we'll continue to push that envelope, but absolutely, this is one of the greatest concerns, and we see it all around us as we move into technology, that we need to solve that problem, and we need to have a good solution to it.
Let's go to Dee now in Pewaukee. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi there. I'm in my XC90 right now. It's parked. And the reason I got it was because I got into a car accident. I was looking down, unfortunately, and hit someone. So I got this car, and it's unfortunate. I was very scared when I heard that there are driverless cars out there right now, because I'm scared to be in my car, and I'm trying out the pilot assist, because when I put it on pilot assist, it reads the lines, and when the lines change, it rears off if I don't pay attention. Does that make sense?
Yes. I actually had a 2003 XC90, and I bought it because of the technology in it, so very similar to the reasons you bought yours. And it's still in our fleet. We actually have it in our company as a transport vehicle. The original XC90 was developed with sensor packages. So we're talking 2003. Volvo did a great job putting a package together with accelerometers for the capability of avoiding, they call it the moose test. If you were to drive this down the road, and of course that's a Swedish car, so they would call it a moose test. If a moose were to walk out on the road, you could be driving at it and you would swerve. And one of the problems always was oversteer. So you would turn to the left to avoid the moose, and you couldn't get your car back to the right to get it back in the lane. They had developed a system that would automatically do that for you, bring you back. And that's back in 2003. One of the main reasons I bought the car was to see how that technology would work. It's also a very, very safe platform. That technology was so important that Ford Motor Company bought Volvo, and they integrated that technology into all of their E-Series vans because they were having rollover problems. And like, I think it was 2005, we had an accident down here on the interstate where a bunch of kids were in a van and they hit the edge of the road, and the guy veered back across. He tried to pull the van back on the road, and it veered across and went across the road. It was a lot of people got killed in that accident. So Ford integrated that into the van, and I have a lot of E350 vans in place, and we really like that the response control that they've added to the vehicle. So getting to the current XC90, it's one of the most advanced platforms on the market. Just short, I mean, it's a Tier 2 technology, but it's just short of Tier 3, and they plan to really advance that technology in the next couple of years. They have a great test bed. They're now owned by a Chinese investment company. So they're still in Sweden. They still look like Volvo. They're great cars and platforms. They will have some very interesting stuff coming up. Now, on the lane keep piece, what you need to do is you need to practice that and understand that you're still in control of driving the car, but it'll keep you from drifting from side to side. So you don't give up driving the vehicle. What you're doing is getting the extra precaution that you're not going to cross in front of somebody else or drift in front of somebody else, especially if you're sleepy or you're having some troubles focusing on the road. At that point, you really should get off the road, but the lane keep will keep you from getting into an accident.
So you're having to do this kind of tango with technology in a way. You have to know kind of the give and take of it.
And the next level is Tier 3, and that's the biggest fear, because in Tier 3, whenever the vehicle cannot stretch its abilities over a certain problem, it's going to hand it back to the driver. And if you look at the video from the accident down in Arizona, the driver wasn't really paying attention. And that's the biggest fear about Tier 3. We had the same problem when we went to anti-lock brakes. People just started assuming the car was going to stop itself. And so insurance companies were actually charging people more if they had anti-lock brakes on their cars. So it was a safety feature that would keep you from sliding or veering off. You know, you wouldn't be skidding, so you'd still have control of your car, and you can actually make little turns and try to avoid an accident. Well, people just thought it was going to stop them, and they were having more accidents. It took a while for society to accept that technology and understand it. So your car is a very advanced car. It has incredible capabilities. When they used to sell the XC90 in 2003 through 7, they would actually take you to a test track. And I got to go to Road America on Volvo's behalf, and they actually showed us how the technology worked. I don't know if they still do that, because I haven't got a modern Volvo, but it was really interesting and showed us the capabilities of the vehicle. But that's a great platform.
Also giving you some training on how to use the technology.
Yes.
Which is actually a good question there. We incorporate these technologies, but then we do need to know how to use them.
Yes, we can't just be ignorant and step into our vehicles and hope our vehicles are going to be better than us. We have to learn how to extend ourselves with our vehicles to give ourselves a safer environment. And these are cultural changes. It's just like when you get your smartphone, it takes you some time to get to understand the power of the smartphone. You're not using it as a phone, you're using it as a communications device. And with these autonomous vehicles too, they're going to have a lot of capabilities in them that we have to learn. And it's going to take us some time to get there.
Let's go to Tim now, joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I am wondering a couple quick questions. What will happen to the 2+2 seating arrangement? Will we ultimately get rid of that when we no longer need somebody to be facing forward, watching where the car is going? And the second is, what will happen to the police forces when they don't have anything to do to generate revenue? Tickets.
Well, there's plenty of there's a lot of information there. First of all, the seating format they'll change the way the platform actually runs. If you've seen, and I think there's going to be one of the units here in Madison the Navia systems, the UW Proving Grounds is bringing it in April, I think. Everybody stands up in that vehicle. So it's a small commuter vehicle, and it's supposed to, they're actually, you know, the goal was is to bring it to campus and have it when you don't want to run the buses later at night, and people could get on it and it would be just like standing on the bus. You won't need to be facing outward. I think when we get to full autonomy, it'll be more like getting into a limousine. You know, you could sit in any direction. The biggest thing would be is what's most comfortable for the people inside the vehicle and what do they want to see. If we still have windows to the outside, you might still want to be forward. People can get car sick from looking at motion or motion sickness from looking outside the vehicle, and this information is going away. The brain takes time to figure that out. But there'll be a myriad of configurations. When I used to fly Southwest, Southwest used to have their airplane seats in parts of the plane which faced each other. And people didn't like that because your feet touched. You know, people don't want to be touching. I loved it because it was great for conversations. I think you're going to see a lot different setup. It'll be more like we do in our mobile homes and stuff. People sit in all different directions and enjoy the personal connection inside the vehicle. The other question about revenue. That is one of the biggest changes we're going to see. I'm a big fan of we should have just got a 5 cents a gallon gas tax this year. Certainly the political powers that be don't feel that that's the way they want to go, and I'm not in a role that I can change that. But we need to do other ways to create revenue. And what you're going to see is, first of all, not all of us are going to own cars in the future. This Uber, Lyft, the car that comes to pick you up and take you places, most of us will be able to get our mobility from a platform like that. But we'll be charged from the second you get out of your driveway and you get on a public road, just like we used to be charged cell phone minutes. We'll get charged for the use of our vehicle. It'll almost be a leasing contract. That money will go in and it'll help pay for the roads. It'll help pay for the police force. The cars themselves will gather a lot of information that'll be able to be sold. Those are all models that have to be vetted out, and we're only at the early stages of it.
Ray Mandley is with us if you're just joining us. He's founder of a company here in Madison collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping, incorporating laser sensors in vehicles. We're looking at the future of autonomous vehicles, autonomous technology, getting your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Are you somewhere in the middle with driverless cars? Perhaps you don't want autonomous vehicles on the interstate, but you're okay with them in shipping facilities or at factories. Where do you draw the line? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Ray Mandley, what regulations do we need to prepare our communities, to prepare our cities, our interstates for self-driving vehicles?
Well, on a national level, Congress has already approved an autonomous driving platform. The Senate has decided that they're going to hold off for a little bit because they want to see more regulation. Certainly the accident in Phoenix is going to push people to say, yes, we need more regulation. At this point, we're so early in the development of the technology, and there's so many questions that need to be answered. The hope is that we don't create a box that doesn't allow us to truly fulfill the potential of the technology. So, yes, there will be regulation. The governor has a council that is studying that. We need public policy. There will be policy wrapped around insurance. There will be policy wrapped around how we culturally operate. I was reading an article in the Tribeca Citizen, and there's a company called Cruise Automation that was bought by General Motors. And Cruise is opening up in the Tribeca area. And I was reading the comments. The article's okay, but the comments are always the most interesting. And the people from that neighborhood were very polarized on that this company was coming there. They've been running very well in San Francisco, but they felt they needed to have an East Coast platform to see how it would run in a city like New York. So they'll be bringing their autonomous vehicles. And many people are afraid that those cars are going to run over people and that they're going to hit bicyclists or there's going to be more accidents. And those are all things that are trying to be quantified. We want to work those pieces out of the equation. We can't work all of them out. And anybody who's been in New York City, you see the taxi cabs running around. And the one thing about an autonomous vehicle, unlike a human-driven taxi cab, is a human-driven taxi cab is going to do whatever it takes to get someplace. An autonomous vehicle isn't in a hurry. And so they're going to have a different set of rules. The one thing that I really feel is important, though, is all autonomous vehicles, how they operate, there's a lot of proprietary knowledge and information going into there. And we're going to have some container to pour this information in for the public and for the people who have to develop policy. So in the Arizona accident, Uber's been pretty free with certain parts of the information, but for them to really get down to the brass tacks, they got to see what the computer saw. Not just what we can see, but what did the computer see, and where was the flaw in the decision-making process, why the vehicle didn't stop? And I don't know how much of that information will be made public. Certainly, they have to report all that information to the federal government. There's regulation in place right now that anytime there's an accident, all the information has to be made available for the continuous research of what's going on. So,
you raise a really interesting point, though, because in this huge echelon of technology out there that can be packed into autonomous vehicles, there's proprietary information all over the place. What will be open access for companies? What will be proprietary? And will that be holding back this innovation?
Well, I can tell you that every day there are at least a dozen companies who are being incorporated in order to be in this arena. So there are a lot of different ideas out there. We need to consolidate some of that, and the big players who have billions of dollars to spend on it are doing some of that consolidation. But they're still keeping everything very private. And you know, I'm under non-disclosure with some of the work that I'm doing, but I can tell you that there is a lot of things that are not being talked about publicly, because in the end there's going to be dollars involved and there's going to be a competitive advantage. And just like we, you know, any of us who use Apple products, we don't hear about a product until Apple introduces it. You don't get 6 months and have them say, we're going to come out with this. We see a pattern, but we have to wait until Apple introduces it. That's what we're going to see from this industry, is they're going to have to keep this stuff close to their chest, because this is not just a U.S. issue anymore. We have the Chinese, we have the Europeans. These organizations are trying to get their place in the industry, and they want to come up with the next thing, as Steve Jobs used to say, the next big thing. And they're not going to tell everybody how they got there so they can have that competitive advantage.
Let's bring in Allie now to the conversation. Allie in Milwaukee, go ahead. Hi.
Good morning. My concern isn't really a technical one, since I'm sure all those technical issues will be resolved. It is about how the displaced workers from the automation what will happen to those people. It's in the concentration of wealth then into those corporations. Loss of Uber drivers, truck drivers, workers for Amazon, and the rest of it.
Certainly that is a great question. We have a cultural change occurring. And it's not much different than when we went from horses to automobiles. We'll have to look at that, and we'll have to study it, and we'll have to watch it as it occurs to see how we can continue to keep people gainfully employed and a part of our society. I don't think anybody is going into this thinking that there isn't going to be a change on that level. But let's take in Wisconsin here a good example. We have this industrial giant coming to the state of Wisconsin, and there's the promise of a lot of different jobs. There's a lot of people working on that. And the hope is that when we create these new industries, that will also create new jobs. But we're also looking at a lot of automation in those processes too. So people are going to have to get to a point where they really understand that there'll be change, and everybody's going to have to contribute to that and study it.
And we'll be back right after this news update. Foxconn Technology Group plans to start hiring construction workers within the next couple months to start construction on its massive campus in Mount Pleasant. The Foxconn complex will produce displays used in a wide range of devices, from TVs to self-driving cars and aircraft systems. We're exploring the future of self-driving cars and the connections to Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ray Mandley thinks about this a lot as founder of a Madison company that collects highway data and 3D pavement mapping and incorporates laser sensors in vehicles. Gathering your questions, your insights at 800-642-1234. Do you see driverless cars as the way of the future? What issues do you have with autonomous vehicles? Do you see benefits other people fail to recognize? And what questions do you have about the technology? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Ed now, joining us from Sheldon. Hi, Ed.
Good morning. Good morning. Very interesting program. I think I could sit and talk to your guest the whole morning with questions, but I just got a couple of them. Some of them were touched on. One of them was the jobs, and I think I'm a truck driver, and sometimes I think of driverless vehicles, and I think about what it was like for a Teamster with a horse and wagon 75 years ago or better, you know, being phased out. And I think some of it will be replaced. My two biggest issues with autonomous vehicles, one is I hate buckling under the corporate interests, and everything says corporate about this. Everything is in regard to corporate profits. You know, the biggest trucking companies are the ones that are pushing this the most. The other issue I have is Paul Harvey, the newscaster, back in probably the early 90s, had come up with an interesting concept. He's talking about the nuclear defenses and how, if a nuclear strike is ever put into effect, one of the forces that's changed considerably around that blast would be electromagnetics, and how strong it's tied into all of our electronics. Now they talk about different things by police departments and different things that they're working on to shoot a magnetic beam at a vehicle to kill the vehicle. What would happen if somebody, even on a real small scale, had something like that, and you got into, say, you're on top of the George Washington Bridge in New York or some of these other areas, there would be hundreds of cars involved before you could create a lot of terror by just killing the electromagnetic field around the vehicle. Am I right?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, the truck driver piece. So I'm actually involved in research on creating autonomous truck corridors in the Midwest. And the current belief is for all the long haul, you would have those run autonomously. And there still will be jobs for people who will be monitoring that. So one of the theories is you'd have five trucks and one driver with the five trucks, or you would do that remotely. But when you get to the short haul, when you have to do the last mile, that's when the truck will replace the driver or the autonomy with a driver, because there's so many nuances. For a very long time, we're still going to have to deal with the most important part, and that's getting the truck up against a building and get loads into it and loads out of it. So the current theory on that is that it'll be a transition period. It'll take a long time. And there is a real need for truck drivers in the country right now. We have a great shortage. We've become very mobile. I mean, just think of all the stuff Amazon ships, FedEx, UPS. We just don't have enough people who are getting into the profession. So autonomy is going to have to pick up some of the slack in there, and eventually it'll take care of all the long haul, the boring part of it, and we'll use humans to do all the last mile. On the technology itself, our cars are so electronic right now, you could do, with an electromagnetic pulse, you could actually do that to most cars today. We have a lot of technology that could be affected by that. The only way to not have that problem is to have something that is really all mechanical, like an old tractor or an old 1960s, 70s car. So, you know, we were always thinking about that. And it's going to be the same thing as we move into autonomous cars or electric cars. But it'll always be the same problem. It can affect those cars. So I can't give you an answer today. I can't tell you anything different, because we already are in that position.
Ed, thanks so much. Jerry now in Green Bay. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I have a Jeep Cherokee with lane assist and a lot of that nice stuff that I use. But when it snows, the lane assist does not work. And when we have snowstorms, a lot of those sensors are covered up and they do not work. So they're nice to have, but you still have to have a person there to take over when they fail.
So, Jerry, you know, I'm sounding like I'm a jack of all trades and master of none because I have so many different subjects that I've been working on. I actually am working with a company on a prototype sensor that can see through snow and rain. So we'll overcome that. And that's for water. LiDAR itself is absorbed into water, so you don't get the signal back for it. So we're using developed a product that works in the near-infrared. Also, radar can see through it. As long as you don't have metal in front of radar. So if you see a car, I know the Lincolns were the ones that have done a really good job with this. You can't even see the radar in them, and it's all behind plastic in the front bumper. But those can see through those kinds of objects. So on your Jeep, you probably have some radar in it. You're very lucky to have a Jeep with that capability. Chrysler Fiat is really doing some interesting work, and they're partnering with Google on their next generation of the Tier 4, Tier 5 platforms. So right now, what you have, yes, it is limited. It's just like the cruise control I mentioned earlier on my Sequoia. When it gets rain or dirt on the lens, it can't see through it. But technology is being developed that won't be affected by that. That'll be able to see through that. And we'll get that capability. The other part of that is the base map that you can put in a vehicle. We can create a virtual pavement stripe of the road. And that's some of the work that I'm also working on. Again, I seem to be all over the place here, but I'm working with one of the major car companies right now to figure out if we can create 300,000 miles of this virtual paint stripe. With that being in the vehicle only has to think about what other variables there are, like snow. The vehicle will have the ability to adjust its sense to drive. So right now, you and I are great drivers. You know, we can go out in the road and we see snow and we slow down and we know to feel the wheel spin and stuff. A computer inside the car will be able to do that at, you know, 100 times faster than we are. It will slow the car down and be able to drive on slippery surfaces because it'll detect wheel spin and make sure that vehicle doesn't lose control. And it'll follow a virtual rail, which is literally a digital version of the center line of that road. And so those are all technologies. We're working on them.
Even if that road is snow-covered,
yes,
ice-covered, you can't see that middle line.
In fact, we will be able to determine how slippery the road is. We'll be able to see black ice, and we'll be able to set the computer. And if the car doesn't feel it can handle it, it will stop. It will not let you go into those areas. So that's coming. It's not here now, but we're already working on that capability.
Jerry, thanks. Let's go to Randy now in Ripon. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. I really am skeptical of this. There was a good article in Scientific American about a year ago about this, and the author just felt like this, you know, well, yeah, we can do it with airlines, but there's such a degree of separation between aircraft and obstacles that it's, and, you know, I pointed out, you need such a duplicity of monitors and sensors in a vehicle that the cost would just be phenomenal. And having owned a vehicle, a pickup truck, where the computer, I'd be going down the highway and the motor would just shut off for no apparent reason. Two different dealerships could not figure out what was wrong with it, so I got rid of it. So who's going to maintain these expensive systems? Because the average person probably can't afford to. Who's going to be held liable when one of them fails? And, I mean, my cell phone, computers go blue screen at a God knows why. What's going to happen when that happens to the vehicle? Thank you.
Oh, great question.
There's a big difference between automotive-grade technology and what we use on our laptops and our homes and things like that. Certainly, there are flaws. We've seen recalls. But these things are tested to the nth degree. That's why it takes so long to get them out there. They spend, you know, a decade perfecting a technology. Yet we will still have problems with it. So, you know, it's you're gonna have that happen, and we're gonna work really hard to try to solve some of those problems so they don't happen. The one thing though that we had the question about jobs earlier, we're gonna need an awful lot of high-end automotive technicians in the industry, and well, these vehicles are in an accident or they do have some damage. Because there will be places where something will fall in the garage and could damage the sensors. We're going to need a workforce, educated workforce, to be able to repair these vehicles. One of the new jobs that will be created by it. But in the end, what we're really getting at here is that reliability has to be really, it will be an important part of how we test these things, because you can't go out on the road and have these things not be reliable.
And then the cost will need to come down so consumers can afford the technology.
Right now, I pay $30,000 for a LiDAR head. The company I work with to get those LiDAR heads, they're building LiDAR heads. They're already working on prototypes that they'll have down in the $100 range. And the question is can they keep them as sensitive and capable as the one that I'm paying $30,000 for today?
As we start to wrap up here, how do you foresee a company like Foxconn using autonomous vehicles to move and send its product?
Well, Foxconn's a study of mine. I've been watching them for a very long time. I'm an Apple product user. I really want to know how things work. And I asked, why couldn't they manufacture in the United States? And the reason was we didn't have the infrastructure to be able to do that. And they had the labor force. Well, they're coming to Wisconsin because, one, they don't need their Chinese labor force that works very inexpensively, and they're going to automate 70, 80, 90% of that plant. And one of the things we talk about infrastructure and transport is that you need to get raw materials in and you need to get the finished materials out. And I-94 just isn't going to accomplish that in its current configuration. So we're going to see a lot of research going on in the next year as to how to modify that corridor to get people in, to get product in, to get product out, move it to the Milwaukee Airport, to the lake, and down to Chicago to get it on rail. And that workforce is going to have to come from two major population centers. So we're going to need mobility, and it's going to be multimodal. So we're going to see everything there.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for making time for us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Ray Mandley is founder of Mandley Communications. That's a Madison-based company specializing in collecting highway data and 3D pavement mapping. Company integrates laser sensors in vehicles. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Nyasia Ellison. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.